We're going to talk shortly with Robin Philpott about the film Revenant, but from a Canadian point of view. And we're even going to explain the word Canadian probably while we're at it. And later we're going to get an update on the situation of very analogous, in my opinion, in Syria and the talks that are going on there and the case of the underreported aspect of foreign intervention and manipulation of the process, and that'll be Zafar Bengash. By the way, Betsa Toon has got some important meetings coming up. There's going on the 26th. That must be tomorrow, I think. Anyway, if somebody send me a calendar, there's going to be poetry readings at Betsa Toon, 7 o'clock tomorrow. And there's going to be The Unpromised Land, early films about Israel, and that will be on the 27th at 7 p.m. And there's going to be a lecture on Greece, the austerity, the struggle, resistance against the imposition by European powers on Greece. And that's going to be on the 28th of this month at 7 to 9 p.m. And Indigenous Nationhood, which is going to be on the 29th from 6 to 8 p.m. So Betsa Toon is busy, busy, busy. BetsaToon.org. Go to that site, get you all the information. And they always have terrific events. It is a beloved community center. And we're joined now, I believe, by a publisher of Baraka Books, Robin Philpott. Are you there, Robin?
Yes. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Thanks for joining us. I understand that there's been some press media reaction in Quebec to this blockbuster, monumental, How We Won the West American movie, The Revenant, about this heroic, white, powerful, rugged, I hope I get all the words right in there, individual who was a trapper and went out. But a lot of evil things happen. And some writers in Quebec have pointed out there's something wrong with this film. What is it?
The only word you forgot was wasp.
I get stung by the wasp thing.
But yeah, there's been several criticisms. Probably the most virulent came from a man who was asked to act in the film. He was asked to play the role of Toussaint Charbonneau.
Yes.
Who, in fact, was the man who guided Lewis and Clark to the West.
Lewis and Clark.
In 1803. And he was originally, if I'm not mistaken, he was born here in Quebec. He was married, or he was, either his family was, and his wife was what's her name, the famous woman who...
Oh, yes, of course, it accompanied Lewis and Clark.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name. I can never remember anybody's name if I'm asked.
Yeah, so this man, Roy Dupree, who is one of, I would say, a leading Canadian actor. He's won prizes at the TIFF, and he's awarded here in Quebec. He was asked to play that role, and Friday night, he came out with a statement to the newspapers, and it's really been gone around. He says this is a racist film, and it distorts history, and it's a racist film.
It's racist. And are you saying he turned down the role?
Yeah, he turned down the role because
we're talking big bucks, people. That's a lot of money.
Yeah,
he turned it down on the principle that it was racist.
Yeah, but he turned it down not because he hadn't seen the scenario. He said they got in touch with him to play the role. He said that he doesn't take on roles unless he reads the script before. They refused to let him, so he said no. And then he went and saw the film, and he said he's really glad he didn't accept. Because it's an anti-French-Canadian film. It says it glorifies the Anglo-Protestant, the Anglo-American way, and how they took over the West, and gives the French a bad role, the French-Canadians, let's make it clear, and their Métis. The Métis as well, gives them the dirty role. And also it distorts history because the the approach of French in Canada and in North America was one of alliances and intermarriage. And this was the time from the time of Champlain. This is a well-known idea, and it's been reflected a lot. People have
Were trappers and traders, right? They weren't weren't coming for the land.
No, there would be small settlements. There were settlements from Montreal to the Pacific Northwest, right to Portland, Oregon, and up north as well. They would have small settlements built alike where there would be agriculture, but they were not looking for land. And that was what the native nations, and they called them nations, liked about it. And so they were not coming to take land. They were building alliances. Because the difference between the French and the English in North America was the English needed land. They were taking land. The French didn't want to depopulate France, and so they built up alliances, and it was a totally different approach. And so he makes this point. Then there's been other ones who said, you know, if you were going to do a film about the West that's honest, you would have to point out that everything was going on in French. There were communities there from the 1650, 1660. The French had been visiting. They were trying to convert to Catholicism, but they were traveling, trading from the. I mean, I know that in Thunder Bay there were people up there from 1667 and Duluth as well.
200 years before this guy from Pennsylvania showed up.
Close to 200 years, and this is a phenomenon, and we're working on a book, and I'll talk about it when it comes out, but. We're working on a very important book, which I think will revolutionize the way we look at North American history. And it points out to what point, what extent these communities of French-speaking, what you would call, they used to call Canadiens, or French-Canadian, mm-hmm. And Métis and Native Nations lived together all across the West. It would be on the Mississippi Valley, Mississippi watershed, on the Missouri watershed, the Saskatchewan River north, all the way into BC, they were there, and the common language up until mid 19th century.
The language of the trappers and the European trapper, those of European origin, and the Native Americans was French, right?
It was totally French. French was the common language, and it was the language. For instance, the guy who, Bridger, I think he's referred to in the film, but Jim mm-hmm. Bridger, a hero in American, the story of the...
There are statues of him in the U.S.
Yeah. He had to speak French fluently because there was no other way he could get along. And, you know, the one thing, you know, Americans and Canadians as well, read Alexis de Tocqueville and his observations about Democracy in America. His book is a must reading.
Yes.
The Tocqueville also visited this area in 1831 in what they call the Midwest now. It was called the Old Northwest, which is Michigan, what is now Wisconsin, Green Bay, all that area.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just flabbergasted, what I would say, by all the people who he met. They were all French-speaking, and in his observations, it was a book which was published only posthumously, which has not been circulated. It's called A Fortnight in the Wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to go to the wilderness. What he called the wilderness, as he realized, was teeming with what they were called Canadiens, which means French-Canadians, and Métis, and he was just like, he just couldn't believe it, and he said, he had, and I'm sort of quoting it here, he said, it's comparable to the French peasantry, but morally superior, he said. They also quickly adopt the natives' way of life. And then he talked about them covering all the borders of Canada and the U.S. He said that they spoke French like the Normands, like from Normandy. They spoke that well, that way. They had the same folklore, the same way of talking. And then he met in northern Michigan a guy, who was he called himself a Canadien, you know, a French Canadian, but he looked more native. I mean, he was a copper colored. This is the Tocqueville thing. And he asked him, he said, is it true that the Indians love the French? And the man replied, he said, yes, sir, extremely. They do not consent to speak anything but French.
Mm-hmm.
In the furthest wilderness, the quality of being a Frenchman is the best recommendation with them. They always remember our good treatment of them when we are masters of Canada. And so this is de Tocqueville writing. Of course, these writings of de Tocqueville have never been made widely known. So
kind of like Jane Jacobs on our national question.
Yeah, and the thing is that in order to create this myth of how we won, how the West was won,
yes,
the people who they took it from, who might have said how the West was lost,
yes,
have to be erased. And so that's basically what this film does.
And not only does it erase, I mean, what you describe and the actor opposed was the French are turned into actual villains. They take a native man.
Yeah.
And they hang him. No, they hang his son, mm-hmm, the French do, French trappers, which, by the way, I can't think of a dumber thing for a man in the wilderness to do than hang a local native because he ain't going to go home safe, I can tell you.
No.
But Hollywood lets him do that. And then they rape the native women, but it's the French doing that.
Yeah.
Not the wonderful Mr. Glass and his friends. No, it was the French.
Yeah,
it's an erasure, you might say, with a lot of elbow grease.
Right, yeah, exactly. And this actor Roy Dupree, you know, who he just said it clearly. He called it a racist film, and it is. You know what? It's the John Wayne tradition. It just sort of modernized a bit, but you know, it's how we won the West, and you know, people.
And by the way, the way we won is by believing in revenge and mm-hmm violently solving every problem.
Right, exactly. Whereas, prior to that, now, not that there hadn't been fighting going on, but here you had these communities, and they're all over. And anybody who wants to look at the maps can just get an idea of all the names that dot, you know, Des Moines, Iowa, Pierre
South Dakota. Yeah.
Boise, all these, the refuge up in the Oregon called Malheur, you know, the town where this terrible shooting in Saskatchewan went on, La Loche, the names of all the people there are basically all French names.
Yes.
You just can't, that just gives you an idea, but really that just touches the surface because there were communities and towns in all across the North America, and so... Yeah. What they've done is basically pursued the myth of the United States.
Myth is more helpful to them than history. It's better to have a good myth that you use it like a blanket, right, to cover over reality.
Yeah, exactly. And so anyway, it just happened that we see this film, when this film comes out, and we're working on this book by three very, very skilled writers and researchers, and it's going to be a good book on pointing out the nature of what the West was before the Anglo went, and the British went West.
Yeah.
And both the Anglo-Americans and the British had to erase the French existence. In other words, you couldn't, your nation building had to remove that from the story.
Yeah.
And they effectively did so. And this film does the same thing.
I'll ask you just to make sure I got the word right. One of our leading actors wrote a public letter, in which he said the film is racist.
He was interviewed coming out of the film. I think he organized that interview, and he said this is racist, this anti-French Canadian.
Oh, great. Well, Robin, it's a very important story. I look forward to that book.
We'll keep you informed and get it to you as soon as it's available.
Great. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Bye. And that's Robin Philpott, and that is an important book. The film, just let's be clear, the name is, it's called The Revenant. The character in the story, his name was Hugh Glass. It does matter, doesn't it, that the film's lying? He didn't have a son by a native woman who was with him. So there was no son that was killed for whom he would have been taking revenge. He did live, he did survive, and he met the two individuals who had left him behind. And I think everybody roughly knows the story. He did not harm either one of them. There's a kind of odd writing about this. He didn't kill him, they said, in fact. Well, that's right. Maybe he didn't feel like it because maybe there was no basis to kill him. It's maddening, again, that Hollywood does this and everybody says based on a true story. No, well, it's not true that he had that episode happened in the way that they describe. What happened was a party was hunting, and one of the party was attacked by a grizzly bear. The bear won a decision, not a knockout, and the other two partners thought he was going to die, and they left him. But he made his way out. By the way, it's not the first time that story's been told in North America. Hollywood adds bunk that he was seeking revenge. In fact, he seems to have been a decent human being. He saw the two individuals, but he didn't ask anybody to arrest one of them. There was a government, by the way, at that time, and he was at a fort. If he thought they had done him wrong, they could have arrested them. He never did that. And to have that phrase based on a true story, it's just appalling. There's a wonderful review in The Guardian by a woman whose name I think her name is Callender, but I'm sorry to get it wrong, who said that it's really violence porn. She says basically it's just putting us all through awful things because she says that the taste, the commanding taste of the moment is to form more and more wretched conduct on film. And she said, in a way, Hollywood seems to be trying to compete with ISIS in terms of awful things they will show you. And she really made a sharp objection to all this.